You have to have humility because anything will happen, and you really just don't want to be out of the game. That's like the worst thing that can happen to you. It's not like people call crypto a game, but it's not like a game where you can respawn, right? If you're out, you're out.
The whole game in crypto is really just about being early. When it comes to VCs, when it comes to trading, when it comes to like hodling, it's always around this concept that someone else is coming later. Once you put those rose-tinted glasses on, put them aside, and then you see everything from this perspective, it sort of changes your view. This game is super easy. The crypto game is super easy. You can just not take most bets. Whenever you're worried that someone's earlier than you just don't take it. You miss on a lot of huge wins, but you actually don't take losses because you're literally just like never someone's exit liquidity. Welcome everybody to another episode of Steady Lads. And even though last week was called the death of altcoins, it feels like this week is the death of altcoins. So let's see how we make it through. Have you guys been surviving? I've seen a poll out there that says that 50% of responders have given up their entire gains for the year, even though Bitcoin is only down, from 70 to 60 after ripping all year. But it's understandable. How are you guys navigating this?
I would say I'm surviving, but not thriving like Thicky might be. I know Thicky's been waiting for this and planning for this for the past few months. And for me, I'm still just sort of doing my thing, chugging along, but I know it's been a great environment for Thicky.
I would say five people have come up to me in the last few days. They don't even know you, but they're like, Vicky, he got it right this time. He got it right.
Yeah, it definitely feels like Vicky's altcoin supply thesis is coming true. Even with the recent airdrops, just none of them have done that well. I guess if we just keep introducing new tokens, there has to be someone on the other side buying. And if there's still a limited pool of capital in crypto, then people have to sell ETH to buy some shitcoin or some other airdrop to sell some shitcoin. I've gotten a bunch of airdrops this week and I've just sold them immediately because I don't want these things. I'd rather just hold ETH or just stablecoins farming. Yeah, like how have you viewed market Sticky?
Gotcha. Yeah, I've been tracking like this altcoin supply for a while now, and it got to a level where it was like quite large, but there was nothing really preventing it from getting even larger. As long as everyone agrees to cooperate and not sell, like it can technically go to infinity. So like obviously like the timing was very surprising, and I definitely didn't make as much money as I should have on the way down, but feels good to like, be directionally correct.
It is so hard to make a lot shorting. You get faked out so many times. You have to close it. Kind of curious to get your strategy on when you decide to close a short and take profit, because the reality is these things just bounce back so hard. We saw that a few days ago, during the nuke, GCR just reappeared from Twitter hiatus. I think it was over a year of hiatus. And his tweet got 9.4 million views. That's like an Elon Musk level tweet right there. So he got 58,000 likes, basically saying, guys, like, the future is still bright. Don't give up. Thank you. Like, had you covered at this point, or did you see this live?
Yeah, I was already flat. I didn't expect the second nuke when the headline from the war broke out. I believe the headline was that Iran was sending drones to attack Israel, and that's when we had the second leg down. And I was completely flat at that point, so we're like very small positions. So I missed the way down. But when I saw GCR's tweet, I pulled out my phone and very ferociously started to bid 60K because it just seemed like really slam dunk sort of scalp.
Yeah, it's incredible how a single trader's opinion who hasn't said anything in forever. And there's probably a lot of people who don't even know who he is because not everybody was following closely last cycle. But it seemed to snowball into a temporary recovery. But here we are back now, at the lows in many ways. I was bringing up, I don't know if you can get up CoinGecko. We can look at some of the dollar values of coins that I was saying last week we haven't seen in months, and now it feels like we haven't seen it in like the entire cycle. Just you know, a lot of stuff surprised me, I guess I would say. Even Avalanche at 34 now.
Yeah, and Justin's favorite coin, Cardano, out of the top 10, replaced by Tongcoin.
That's a little tragic. I think we all know Cardano deserves to be up there, and to see it flipped by these other projects is very disappointing.
But it is kind of shocking, right? Like, some of these things 2 weeks ago were literally trading at multiples of what they are now, and they're very large coins. Like, even something like Aptos going from 18 to 9 is theoretically, you know, like a $10 billion wipe in 2 weeks.
The funny thing is, like, you know, both, at least as of 2 days ago, Bitcoin, altcoins, and the S&P were all trading at the prices they opened at on March 1st. So, I mean, it goes to show, like, even though altcoins are down so much, like, it's only erased maybe a month and a half worth of gains. It's a cool phenomenon to see, though, because, like, it's less so about, like, price and more so just about, like, oh, everyone that entered past this time, these guys are probably late. These guys probably had weak hands, and all of them probably sold. So now we're just at the prices we started at before March, where, like, it was a bit more of, like, the stronger hands people that were, you know, holding these coins.
I was going to ask you, Thicky, you're short and you have this thesis about altcoin supply, you know, coming onto the market and altcoins just bleeding relative to Bitcoin. But are you looking at this from the lens of there's actually, like, a fair value where you want to step in and buy these coins? Or is that not even in your calculus right now? You're not really looking for entry at a better price. You're just think all of this stuff is overvalued.
It sounds bad, but I genuinely think for most coins, like, the fair value is actually zero. And, like, when you do want to buy these things, it's always, like, for, like, an event or like a catalyst that drives people, you know, putting money into these things. But yeah, like, assuming no catalyst and nothing's happening, like, it should just go to zero after, you know, over time.
It's basically like people betting that they're early, that there's people later than them that will come in and you know, keep buying. That seems to be a bet on most of these coins. Obviously, meme coins, that's quite true, and I would say, like, a lot of other coins as well. So if you don't have a really strong opinion about being early, and if you're definitely early, you start doing weird things. You know, some of the venture things that happened last cycle were basically like VCs just thinking that it doesn't really matter what the thing is, what the valuation is, as long as I'm the first check-in and this goes to market, that's all that matters. Like, there'll be a willing buyer at a higher price. And unfortunately, that is true part of the time. And I will say, I've brought this up before, shorting is really hard. And I'm not saying it to discourage people from shorting. I'm saying it to point out why some of these valuations were so high in the first place. Nobody dares to, like, go against, you know, the flood of like this temporary money. And that results in, like, we saw extreme dislocations. Ultimately, is it the weird thing that something was trading at 20 billion 2 weeks ago, or that it's trading at, you know, half of that now? Maybe the weird one was the 20 billion.
Yeah, that's interesting. And we saw this phenomena last week where I think Dickie talked about this last year as well, where if some big player wants to dump their coins, they're going to dump their alts first, because if they dump Bitcoin first, then altcoins will just go down a lot. So they might as well just, you know, like, to dump all their alts and then dump their Bitcoin. And even today, on Wednesday, Bitcoin underperforming some alts. Of course, you know, 1 day price action doesn't really mean much, but, you know, definitely interesting to see all these patterns play out. And yeah, like, you know, these altcoin inflation rates are pretty ridiculous. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a similar summer lull that we saw, I guess, something similar to 2021, where the market just went down a lot and just chilled before putting in a higher leg later in that year.
I've been trying to grapple with how it can be true that both you're hearing from people that, like, both we haven't had an alt season yet and Bitcoin dominance has just rallied. And then the other side of, like, we have had an alt season and all of this crazy junk has gone up 10, 20x and beyond. Like, how is it possible that both of those are true? Is it just that the gains in alts were concentrated in a smaller share of coins than just, like, a broad distribution, and that's allowed BTC dominance to rally as well?
I don't know who says there hasn't been an alt season. Maybe it's like the Cardano and XRP holders we mentioned, because they haven't seen one.
I feel like the past 6 months has mostly been a Bitcoin plus Solana cycle, where Bitcoin goes up, Solana tangential things go up. But you know, meme coins kind of slowing down. And with more and more of these Solana airdrops, I feel like 6 months ago, there was a lot of reasons to use Solana, farming Tensor, Parcel, Drift, MarginFi, all these things. But with each new incremental token that does get introduced, I feel like there's less of a reason to use Solana in the future, which I think can also be bearish on-chain usage of things like Sol. I'm not sure where that activity goes because ETH, I mean, what do you do on ETH other than restake? I think gas hit like six a couple of days ago, which is pretty ridiculous. Maybe it's L2s, but maybe I'm not sure. Maybe it's crypto natives around.
I think you're right. Like Solana definitely was the poster child of this skate alt season that has happened. And I had a message from a friend a couple of days ago saying that he thought that actually it came back to fundamentals because in his view, Solana kind of breaking, like the chain breaking and like not functioning properly. He says it's very, very similar to that moment in the nightclub where you've been partying and having drinks and flirting and you're having a good time. And then suddenly like the lights turn on. Yeah, we see here the message. He says, you know, it crushed the vibes. It's like turning on the lights at the club and everybody just like snaps out of this like gamble, have fun mood because you can't get your transactions through. And it kind of like stops that dopamine rush from going. You kind of reflect on your life a little bit and, you know, maybe you take some profit and maybe there's limited chairs for you know, when the music stops.
How do you think the Bitcoin halving plays into this? I feel like last cycle people cared a lot. Maybe it was just the people I followed, but this time around, like no one really cares. I guess there's Token 2049 in Dubai, and I guess people care more about the flooding than the halving. Do you think Bitcoin, of course, over a long enough time horizon, it does make a difference, but do you think it's going to be like a nothing burger like it was 4 years ago last cycle?
You know, these things matter, right, Thicky? Like they matter in the end, eventually.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I this is like at least the way I view like sort of fair value for Bitcoin and alts was that like, you know, Bitcoin is going to average these amount of inflows a day and it has, you know, this amount of supply a day. And like the math just supports an argument for it to be higher. With the halving supply at these prices only at $30 million a day, it's just, there's not enough Bitcoin out there. So like it has to resolve higher, but it, you know, the alts, at the values they were like 2 weeks ago, were just completely negating any inflows coming to Bitcoin. And, you know, the question I was, you know, asking for a long time is like, can these things decouple? Can it actually go Bitcoin up and alts down? And like, in my mind, I was like, no, it's not possible. Like, we don't have like, the herd is not rational enough for that to happen. So it has to go like everything goes down, but alt goes down more. And then when it goes up, Bitcoin goes up and alts go down less. And eventually we reach this fair value where like Bitcoin gets to where it needs to be, and then alts get to where they need to be, and people stop selling their Bitcoin for altcoins.
Absolutely. But like, honestly, looking at some of these numbers, like I said, I was just shocked. The other day, I look at the nuke, and it's like, where's the bid? Like, Polygon's back at like 60 cents? Like, how is this like a top 10 coin, and it's just like nukes like, you know, 50% of the value in a week. And it reminded me of something Max Boonen said, who's he used to be like one of the founder of B2C2. I remember like an old podcast, he was describing market making. He said, you know, there's the inner spread, which is what you see on the book. That's kind of like, you know, high frequency traders trying to make markets and like quote a little bit. But then there's the outer spread, which is like, what are the longer term, not like, you know, fundamental people, but like the swing traders that are going for longer term swings. What's their spread? Like, where is it? And what we've seen is that for a lot of altcoins, most of them, the outer bid is not there. Like, we've run up so much that for people to, like, print fresh money and come in with, like, you know, a bunch of Tether, like, print new Tether and start buying these altcoins, it's not really at the valuation where we had gotten to. It's a lot lower.
And I guess this is more signs to show that though retail has slowly come back, there's still not enough new inflows to support these valuations / new token, inflation rates. I'm not sure when retail comes back in like massive flocks. I mean, is there a possibility that this is just going to be a Bitcoin-led cycle and most alts just go flat to down? That would be a pretty harsh reality for most, including mid-curves like myself. But I guess we do have to consider things like this. Do you have thoughts on that?
I have thought about it. I mean, it would be very painful for me as a majority ETH holder and then some longer tail assets with no Bitcoin exposure. But I actually think in the long run, it could be quite healthy for crypto. Like, we've talked about this before, but I think the incentives are what's driving some of the bad, or is what's driving all of the bad behavior that, and speculation we see in this space. Like, if Bitcoin continues to do well, crypto proves out its use case as a money, and then all of these other projects have to find ways to add value and drive value back to token holders that, and, you know, lives up to the valuation, which they do not now. The valuations are way too extended. I could see that being long-term bullish. Like, if this cycle is a Bitcoin cycle, and then all of these projects and everything that everyone's been building, they actually have to deliver, right? They can't just deliver the token. They actually have to deliver on value on a product for the token to do well. And I think that's just long-term healthier. But it's still not my base case. My base case is if Bitcoin went to 100K, all of this thing starts flying.
Yeah, I think that's a good base case. And we saw this interesting tweet about the largest fiat trading pair is not the USD, it is the KRW. So apparently $456 billion for Korea's trading volume is larger than the US dollar volume. Obviously, this doesn't include, you know, Binance Tether. This is maybe comparing Kraken and Coinbase, but that's maybe supporting your base case, Justin, that there is an altcoin excitement whenever the markets are good, and it's not around Bitcoin. Although I will say I have been in Dubai and spending time here, apart from yesterday where I was, you know, swimming around. The other days I did have some good meetings, and the meetings have confirmed my suspicion that the Middle East really likes Bitcoin. There are some very wealthy people that are TWAPing Bitcoin. No joke. Like, it's real. It's happening. They are TWAPing Bitcoin. You know, they also like AI, surprisingly. Like, everywhere you walk around Dubai, there's like a government-sponsored AI center. I think this is kind of maybe their attempt to, you know, front run and try to get in front of the West is through AI, maybe. I don't know how many of you guys have been tracking down AI, and maybe even this like AIX crypto, which has been talked about a lot on Twitter lately.
Yeah, I actually think that, I mean, if we do see a retail bubble in crypto, like, crypto AI has to go up because AI is the biggest investment theme in TradFi. So naturally, if regular people come, then they're going to look for AI coins. And I was charting things like BitTensor, Render, Akash, WorldCoin. And if you overlay the NVIDIA chart for all these things, I mean, they're all NVIDIA beta, where if NVIDIA starts to hit new highs, like, all these AI coins go up like 3x. And then if NVIDIA stops moving, then all these coins go down 50% because there's not enough inflows. So I think they're all just meme coins, to be honest. And I think that's not like a bad thing if you know how, you know, if you can just get in and get out. Because fundamentally, like, you know, it's really hard to look at BitTensor and be like, oh yeah, like, this is the future of AI. And even all the new AI coins that, you know, will come online soon. And with more incremental AI projects that launch tokens, it's like the same idea where it introduces more tokens. The amount of money that's willing and able to bid AI coins is going to, you know, it's going to be spread out across the board. And then everything just has to start compressing until new money flows back in.
Yeah, let's bring up this Fiscanti's tweet. I would say that this was one of the most interesting threads, especially because of the replies. So he says that crypto XAI has two major camps. They both think it's total vaporware. So both camps, as you can see, are thinking it's vaporware. But one side is like avoiding it because it's vaporware. The other side is like, you know, getting in, wants to trade it. And he kind of has in this thread a few people that he says genuinely believe in the vertical. One of them is Ilya from Near. One of them is Temple Cash. And, you know, I kind of went through some of the comments after and people describing. It's quite interesting. You know, some people think, yeah, we have Rune here.
Maker DAO guy.
The perfect scam.
He's so jaded.
He is jaded. But, you know, Ilya from Near obviously has been leaning into this, you know, partly because of his background. And this is something that he can make a great narrative out of for his chain. But he responded, and I know they're doing a crypto AI fund. And a lot of the counter argument is that undoubtedly, like, these two technologies are ultimately like the most important technologies of this century. And when you have ways that they can interplay, they will eventually be found out and we will start having things that make sense. And maybe even the existing ones do kind of make sense a little bit around the edges. So it is something that I've been personally digging into and I find quite interesting. And, you know, at the very least, we're going to learn a little bit about the AI space, which is for the best, I think. Are you guys tempted by any AI coins at the moment?
I'm looking into BitTensor as the leading AI meme coin. And Justin, if you can share my screen also, Andreessen Horowitz, A16Z, I think they raised $7 billion to allocate to AI startups and crypto. So, you know, obviously money is going to pour into this space. So maybe this is like maybe later in the cycle, this can actually be like a PVE sector where maybe you don't have to make crazy bets and be right. As long as you're roughly riding the wave in the trend, maybe, you know, you can just dump into these VC bids that eventually has to come into this space as well.
Yeah, I think this all hinges on like whether, you know, Bitcoin can hold this price, and if it can't, like whether it can have a second leg or not, because like obviously like the flows that have come in now are from people buying the ETF that, like, you know, I think are speculating on equities, now they're buying the ETF. And like the wealth channels where, like, you know, it's like the 401ks and like the, I don't know, the mutual funds, pension funds, like those guys like haven't come in yet. The question is just like how much flow comes in from those guys. And then if they do come in, then, like, you know, you probably should try to position for all these hot alt narratives like AI.
I mean, the AI thing, I think ultimately we'll get these eyeballs. It will get people, you know, feeling provocative. Maybe Brad, now you can cut to the, it's provocative, whatever. People don't know what it means.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets the people going.
So ultimately, I think it is a narrative that will pick up steam. We're quite early to it. It's early. Most of the stuff doesn't make sense right now. There will be some huge winners, I think. And maybe it won't be WorldCoin. Maybe it will be. But there have been people buying goats. We mentioned the one goat last week, and apparently now there are many goats, so more world coins have been going around. And, you know, this thing was trading at 110 billion. Justin, are you were expressing that you were quite surprised to hear that it had gotten that far.
It's just these numbers get so astronomical so quickly, it's insane. I think there's less than $1 billion of circulating supply, and, you know, over 100 billion FTB is insane. I mean, WorldCoin is like a proxy for AI because of Sam Altman, but it actually, from my understanding, it doesn't really have anything to do with AI except for this thesis that, you know, we'll need some sort of UBI and decentralized identity should we live in an AI world. So it seems like a very weird derivative bet on AI. I think it's really just a bet on Sam Altman. And it's, you know, it's no surprising. He's like the biggest fundraiser right now. He's the hot new guy. And it makes sense that he has a token and it's going crazy. But over 100 billion FTV is nuts. I mean, just think about what a real company would have to do to have a market cap of over $100 billion. It's insane.
Let's bring up the market cap though, because the market cap and FTV, you know, this is kind of reflecting some of the most extreme Solana 2021 ratios. But you can see the market cap is actually very low. It's under a billion for a coin that everybody knows about, and generally coins that are very well known can sustain $1 billion of market cap regardless of what, you know, the theoretical FTV is.
Yeah, I'm hoping Thicky could touch on his thesis here. I was listening to Thicky doing a space earlier about, and he chatted about FTV versus market cap, and he basically laid out the case, and you can do it now, Thicky, that when you're trading price, you're literally just trading FTV. Maybe you could share a little bit more about your thoughts there.
I think the thing at the back of everyone's mind with WorldCoin is, like, you know, there still is, like, you know, at this price, there's like $40 million every 2 weeks. So like roughly like $3, $4 million a day of, you know, people all around the world selling WorldCoin to fund their personal lives.
Buy goats,
yeah. And in July, they're unlocking like roughly like 100 million tokens a month, which is, this price is like $400 million, $500 million. So like given how soon it is, it's just hard for people to like actually like buy and hold this thing and like feel comfortable with all that supply coming, is my thought.
I interviewed Alexander Good on my channel, who's super deep into AI and crypto. And he runs, I guess, Google Ads and found out that there's so many people that look up Sam Altman. And if there are ads where it says, you know, buy WorldCoin by Sam Altman, people click, like the click-through rate on that is insane. So it literally is just Sam Altman meme coin. And if crypto is an attention economy, then, you know, WorldCoin is always going to be at the top of people's watch lists. And if it starts pumping, it could be reflexive. You know, the tangential nature to AI also can make it reflexive. So I don't think it's like that egregious because, I mean, like you said, the circulating supply is like pretty low. But yeah, it's hard for me to just buy this thing. You know, it's I just view it as like vaporware for now.
It's kind of crazy that WorldCoin is like the best proxy in the world for betting on AI. For most people, like you can't get exposure to OpenAI, the current leader in AI from what we understand. But you can get access to this WorldCoin token that Sam Altman controls and is responsible for. And yeah, I mean, I would never have guessed it would have gone to over 100 billion FDV, but it really isn't surprising to your point, Taiki.
Can't you just buy Microsoft to get OpenAI exposure?
So Microsoft has been making multiple AI bets. They hired the ex-co-founder of DeepMind. They also have invested in, apparently there's in the Middle East here, like in Abu Dhabi, like there's a super strong AI company as well, I was reading, and they're doing extremely well, and Microsoft's also investing in that. So yeah, I mean, you know, you can invest in Microsoft. It's a good bet, and probably WorldCoin is a little bit more like it's equivalent of like, it's like Elon Musk to Dogecoin is to Sam Altman to WorldCoin. Like this is like the ratio of followers and attention maybe that should be expected. Of course, the difference with Dogecoin is that there's no like unlocks or anything like that at this point. It is quite out there, which is maybe why you know, it's quite a lot higher. But let's switch gears a little bit. We asked, was it you guys asked us in your Twitter followers what kind of things we should chat about, and there were a couple responses. What do you guys want to dig into here?
I guess I don't really have a war story in the sense that, I mean, when USD was depegging, I was just trying to frantically sell. But I know I'm just like some individual pleb mid-curve online, so. You know, I don't really have any war stories, but I think the biggest intellectual win in crypto, and this kind of kickstarted my YouTube career, I suppose, was when I was buying farm tokens in Q4 2020 on chain, getting wrecked in gas fees. I bought like Badger. I don't know if you guys remember Badger, but that was, I mean, that went down 99%. And I was so fed up and I was just getting dumped on by whales, where I saw Matic and Polygon and I just aped in. Just because, oh yeah, like fees are cheap. There's Aave, you can borrow USDC, get paid 50%. You can deposit USDC, get paid 40%. It was actually insane. And I think I really helped people onboard on like crypto and on-chain using Aave, using Curve, using DEXs. And that really kickstarted my YouTube channel. I actually, you know, using Aave was the first time I had an aha moment where I was like, wow, like I can actually use Bitcoin as collateral. Like that's crazy. This is an actual bank. And ever since I had that moment, I've always been, you know, just bullish DeFi or leaning bullish DeFi. Of course, the whole Uniswap SEC situation, you know, we'll see how that pans out, even though I think hopefully regulatory clarity can be a bullish event for the average altcoin out there. But, you know, just I think the coolest thing about crypto is that it really is a meritocracy. People don't really care that much about your background. As long as you share and post good ideas and you're consistent and you're a good person, people do follow you. People do want you to succeed. And I think I really encourage everyone to just post more, create content. I'm an introvert as well, but, you know, I just put myself out there, and that really is the best way to just set yourself up to get lucky and succeed. You just have to keep trying is like my
success. You said you're... You might become a podcaster now. This is like you found a little niche here.
I know. Every time I talk about altcoins, something like Canto happens, and I just have some massive PTSD where I sell the bottom, then Jordy and Thicky buys the bottom, and people call me a mid-curve.
Okay, we got wrecked on Canto too, Taiki. We got
we all capitulated. Yeah, it's. Kanto just causes emotional distress among anyone involved. Yeah, I'm proud to be a mid-curve. Maybe do more podcasts from now on. Less altcoin content.
I can share my biggest mistake. So for me, it was like making this conscious and partially idealistic decision last cycle to basically not sell and to ride ETH all the way down. There wasn't a moment where I said, like, this is certainly what I'm going to do. But I remember thinking a million times before, like, okay, yeah, you know, we'll go down. But, you know, I believe in this in the long term, in the future. And I think it's a very common first cycle thing is to just want to hold these things in the long term, like HODL, don't sell, like in the long term, you'll get paid out. But that's certainly not the best approach. Like, crypto is so cyclical. It's actually fairly easy to time the cycle with broad strokes, right? Like, obviously, you're not going to nail it perfectly. But I think that's something I'm trying to correct this cycle. Like, I have a very, very, very precise and specific sell plan, and I'll be sticking to it. Not that I don't believe in these assets in the long term, but I want the opportunity to take advantage of the volatile nature of crypto. Like, that's why we're in this space, for the volatility. And so I'm certainly going to do my best to correct it, but you never know. Maybe I miss it.
Yeah, I think Kobe said hodling is for poor people. I think even like the whole ETH BTC thing, right? I feel like only ETH maxis care about the ETH BTC ratio. And I remember you, Justin, saying, oh, it's already down this much. I'm not going to sell. But also, I feel like that's also a dangerous mindset to get in, where maybe in the future, maybe even now, it's like, oh yeah, like my coin's down 30, 40%. It's too late to sell now. Well, if you're going to panic early, it's okay to just farm stable ETH or just LP positions, DeFi, et cetera. Just bet when you have an edge.
This is actually a great point. When I swap out of ETH and back into stables or back and then back into crypto, I'm going to be much more aggressive about picking up Bitcoin versus ETH. Not even so much for the like a dominance play or ETH outperforming, but I actually think like the case for Bitcoin truly is stronger than ever now. Like, if you're betting on a changing world order, global conflict, the money supply continuing to expand, like Bitcoin really is the best play there. And I feel to some extent I've missed that by being blinded by like the applications you can build on ETH. And so that's another thing I want to correct next cycle.
Maybe ETH BTC bottom.
Well, I'm certainly not converting now. It's not the time to do it now, but yeah.
Yeah, sometimes like these decisions are financial decisions and sometimes are cultural decisions. And I think, Justin, you're describing some things that, you know, for you, we're more about being aligned with a certain culture, and it activates a different part of the brain than just like a pure math, you know, calculation maybe.
How about you, Dickie? Do you have a biggest win, war story type of thing that you think will be good for our audience to hear?
There was this one day last year, and I believe it was in August, when like perps went puked like $2,000 below spot, and like Bitcoin hit 24K. This is right after Grayscale won. Like, everyone was super bullish, and then like, you know, price just stopped going up, and then some large guy just sold. And I remember sitting there like, I first started sizing up. So I'd taken on these like big long short positions, and the shorts were up a lot more than I expected. The longs were up a lot more than expected, but like, I just have never seen that volatility in that short of a time. And I think people like, you know, that joined before, you know, 23, 22, like before I started trading, like, you know, it's kind of normal. But like, for me, like, that was just like the most volatile, like, sort of 1 hour period I've ever seen. I was kind of just frozen for a second, didn't know what to do. I guess just like instincts took over, and I just bid. I don't even know how much I bid. I just like bid. I just like clicked the button three times. And then DeFi Squared actually messaged me, and he was like, yo, check out the XRP inverse perpetuals. And they're trading like 30% below like what the XRP perps were trading at. So like, you could just like buy the inverse perp and then sell the perp and just lock in 30% with no risk. So I put like, I frantically told my partner to like put that trade on while I was bidding Bitcoin. And when things recovered, it like, you know, it was a good day for us. But it was definitely like a foray into like, yeah, I was just like very shocked that like that happened. I was caught by surprise.
I guess like, what's the saying? It's, you just pick up free money on the floor five times, and just that makes up your entire performance. I guess
the right position most of the time is like no position, right? And then you just wait for the kind of clear money opportunities. Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of war stories from last cycle. I would say this cycle, thankfully, has been a lot smoother. But last cycle, there were two scary moments. One of them I kind of survived. That was when Dogecoin pumped from sub 1 cent and just overnight went to 9 cents or 8 cents, I think was the local top. I had been kind of playing the back and forth between half a cent and 1 cent, and I'd been making a few quarters, picking up a few quarters on the side of the road. And I think I had like a $300,000 short on Doge, and it was kind of, scalping these like 20K, 50Ks. And I think Elon tweeted something, and then Snoop Dogg, everybody jumped in. It became this this phenomenon. And I wake up and was down quite a lot. Thankfully, it had this like sell-off where it came to 3 cents or 2 cents or something. And I just quickly got out for a loss, and thankfully I did, because it ripped up 42x after. And when it comes to dog money, I've seen both sides of dog money, and we'll come to this back at the pasta at the end because it's quite relevant. The second war story, which unfortunately did not end as well, was actually a period that reminds me of the current period we're in, which is the March 2021 period. After Bitcoin running to highs, it had, gone to 64K, I think, at the time. We had this period where it stalled out and it sort of puked. And back then, the open interest was a lot higher, comparatively, and the liquidations were quite painful. I remember having, some positions on Binance where I was long BTC, and frantically like trying to keep adding, capital to get the liquidation level lower. So I was trying to move money from FTX and get it on Binance. And I remember I got it to like 27K, which I thought was like, okay, like this should hold up. And there was a scam wick from, I don't know if you guys remember this. It went from 40 to 30 in for like a second, and just like bounced back super hard after that. Like that was like the bottom. And the Binance algorithm seems to be quite aggressive, and just the fact that it maybe like temporarily went below 30, it just li liquidated the entire account. Like everything that was there just disappeared. Meanwhile, like FTX, obviously FTX is a piece of shit, like looking back, but it didn't liquidate at all. Like there were no liquidations for similarly priced liquidation points. So I guess that was a learning that you never want to get liquidated, because even if you look at things from like a risk reward perspective, the risk part of paying the liquidation fee and like losing that extra like 10% of your money makes it just like a fool's errand. So I personally never do these like isolated margin things where people just put positions on and they're like, oh, if I get liquidated, I get liquidated. I actively have never gotten liquidated since that time. That was like the one time in my life I got liquidated. And so I actively avoid that now.
The May timeframe in 2021 was insane. I think I woke up and the majors were down 30 to 50%. And I think I was a few hundred dollars from liquidation because I was using Aave on Polygon, and I was doing some carry trades where I was borrowing stables to like farm other stablecoin yields and whatnot. I guess like what people are doing with the DNA right now. And yeah, it's really scary, right? Like you just wake up, you open your phone. It's like, holy shit. Like, I'm so scared to check my Aave position, or maybe like a perp position for other like perp traders and whatnot. You have to have humility because anything will happen, and you really just don't want to be out of the game. That's like the worst thing that can happen to you. It's not like people call crypto a game, but it's not like a game where you can respawn, right? If you're out, you're out.
The big wins, ultimately, it comes to your style. The biggest lesson for me that I've mentioned in this show already, and I think is probably just not a lot of people will think and reflect on it enough, is that the whole game in crypto is really just about being early. When it comes to VCs, when it comes to trading, when it comes to like hodling, it's always around this concept that someone else is coming later. And once you put those rose-tinted glasses on, put them aside and then you see everything from this perspective, it sort of changes your view. So there's a few implications. One is this game is super easy. The crypto game is super easy. You can just not take most bets. Whenever you're worried that someone's earlier than you, you just don't take it. So you miss on a lot of huge wins, but you actually don't take losses because you're literally just like never someone's exit liquidity. So I've taken this approach more than most other large traders, I would say. It avoids sometimes getting those like huge 10Xs, but on the other end, I've said this before, yes, I missed the Solana run-up. Unfortunately, I can't stand being anyone's exit liquidity, and I've missed some big wins, but it's made me avoid incredible number of losses by just not putting myself in that spot. So once you see that, you can kind of choose how you want to play it. If you want to just, you know, accumulate certain small edges, or you know, go for home runs. But even hodling, like Bitcoiners, you know, they act all like, you know, religious about it, and this is about the Fed and everything. Look deeper, and it's still like, okay, they think that everybody else will have to buy their bag because the whole world will come around to. But it's the same thing.
I think the Bitcoin narrative last cycle was, oh, you know, institutions are going to buy our bags, and then I think a year ago the ETH narrative was, oh, you know, retail is going to come back and they're going to buy our bags. But it turns out people are just buying meme coins and like no one's buying our bags.
Well, the ETFs are, right? So there was truth to that. There was truth to it.
This is back in like October. I think I just done the interview with you, Taiki. And then I was just explaining my bearish altcoin thesis. And you labeled the video like why altcoins are investable vaporware. And like that interview actually marks the bottom on altcoins, I think. You know, in the 2 or 3 months prior, I was just making so much. It's like literally any rip, I would just short and I would make money. And like I, you know, like grown the account a lot doing that. So I was like getting really like confident that I could just keep sizing up on these shorts. So going into this weekend, like Bitcoin was at like 28, 29K, and I was short maybe 60 or 70% of the book on Aptos at like 450 or something. And I was like feeling very good about myself. I was like short Aptos, long Bitcoin. And then suddenly just like Aptos just ripped almost 50% that weekend. And like I checked and I was like down a massive amount. Like I'd given back pretty much like all my gains for those past 2 months. And I was just feeling like, I was feeling super sick to my stomach. But like, you know, instead of closing the position, I just kept adding to it because I was like, they're not gonna beat me, dude. Luckily, like the next day I get bailed out because Bitcoin just, that was the day that Bitcoin like hit 35K in 1 day from 30. And I closed my position there and I realized maybe like, I don't know, 7 to 10% loss in the portfolio. And I just like called it a day. I was like, this is good enough for me. And ever since then, I've never sized an alt short bigger than like 20% of the book or anything. But yeah, it was definitely like a humbling experience. Definitely got my hand caught in the cookie jar there with shorting alts. So that's what Jordy's point. That's why it's so hard to short alts, because like the path on these things is kind of crazy.
It's so hard. And then that causes there to be no shorts, which causes the prices to be dislocated and there to be like no bids. So whoever like is thinking through the dynamics, I think can figure out inefficiencies that are there for still, you know, playing this structure. But it's not easy. It's not easy at all. Yeah, just before we go to pasta, so WorldCoin, our topic of the day, has just announced WorldChain. So, you know, layer ones always have the highest market cap, so it seems good sense. I think Tether is doing a chain and everyone's doing a chain. So WorldChain, let's see, what do we have here, Justin? It's a blockchain designed for humans.
I know, like, think about the total addressable market. It's the entire population. Oh my goodness, I'm so bullish.
Shouldn't they be doing something for AIs as well? Like this is a bit surprising. Oh, it's this, okay. But the super chain, it was always a super chain, right?
Yeah.
Is this anything new, Thicky, or is this just the existing Weren't they always a chain?
No, they were on Optimism before, and it was like rumored that they were going to do a chain, and now it's official. They're going to launch their own Optimism fork.
Okay. Was this not like well known that this was going to happen? I feel like I kind of thought that this was...
It was kind of well known, but they teased it yesterday and it pumped a little bit, and they announced it and then it pumped and they did that classic fade. So yeah, we'll see if this can offset all the goats.
I wonder, where does all of this end with everyone having their own chain? You know, does this mean bridges and like that sort of infrastructure is much more valuable because every application is going to end up having its own little chain?
Yeah, I mean, that's why Wormhole and Layer Zero can raise 9 figures of capital, right? Because whoever does end up winning, yeah, surely they'll be worth a lot.
And it's not just bridges. I think it's just like generalized interoperability is going to be a lot more valuable. You know, like Polygon's ag layer, I think, is going to be very important tech in the world where every project has its own chain.
This adds to like the modularity narrative where, yeah, like ETH doesn't scale, L2s don't really make sense. There's going to be thousands of L2s. You know, this multi-chain future, which unfortunately there's not enough. I mean, there's so many L2s. There's not enough apps for the users. I guess at some point there will be users. I don't know. I feel like I'm getting more jaded with like this L2 ecosystem. I just see all these new L2 teams raising 30 to 50 mil at like a $2 billion value, like $1 billion valuation.
I'm like completely jaded by like the quantity of chains, but I actually think like, although it seems like it's fragmenting ETH and liquidity and whatnot, it's actually a competitive advantage that you can be a company that can basically like build its own chain on Ethereum and still have some connection to the liquidity there. Versus if you're like a very large company or player, and if you try to launch on Solana, like there's really no way to capture the value of the chain there yourself, right? And so I think like we're going to see like teams are going to be continue to be incentivized to launch their own L2s, and that is a powerful thing. But I agree, it's a messy user experience.
Who's going to kick us off for Plaza this week?
I'll go first. So Justin, if you can pull it up. So obviously, Token 2049. This obviously, I didn't even know that in Dubai there's this thing called cloud seeding, where you know the government creates these rain clouds and they can't really control the rain output. So sometimes things like this happens. And this kind of reminds me of, I guess, what we talked about earlier with interoperability and bridging. I don't know, like this guy is literally just making bank, just charging people to go from one sidewalk to another. And this, you know, this could be a good advertisement for Layer Zero or Wormhole. I just thought this was hilarious given how crypto works went to Dubai and now they can't do anything.
Yeah, Jordy, is it that bad? Like, tell, what's it actually like on the ground?
It was that bad for a day, and you know, everyone was thinking this is going to be cataclysmic. But of course, the next day, everything just evaporates, right? Like, it's so hot, you're in the desert, like all the water will just evaporate the next day. So I think it's mostly cleared up, and we'll be okay. But actually, Taiki, in that image there, if you view your analogy as like someone's bridging between two blockchains, like on each side, and the guy's moving, kind of works, because some of the names of the stores there are like very much looking like crypto ads. Yeah, Max, like if you look Smart. Here, it's like Max Smart. Like, you know, that's I feel like that's a good kind of coin to buy, the Max Smart coin. Maybe it's like sounds like a Richard Hart token.
Remember Smart Coin last cycle, Jordy, where I think it was on Avalanche and they asked. It was like a 1,000,000% APY, and they asked the community whether they should raise or lower the APY. Everyone voted to raise it, and then the token just went down 99%.
I think the Smart Coin was probably one of the times where I described exactly that. Like, if you play the game thinking, like, how am I not going to be backholding and I'm going to be early, you could always make some sure money in Smart Coin by, you know, buying and then just like selling while everybody else is trying to figure out the timing. Cool. Justin, do you have a pasta?
I do. This kind of goes in line with what we're talking about all these private rounds, KOLs, all of this stuff. And Zach XBT, it seems like he got the Google form to purchase this one intro token. And they have this hilarious yes or no question on the form. For you to get an allocation, you have to agree to be respectful with selling in small batches. And even if you do take profit and agree that providing zero support or irresponsible selling that can lead to a refund where they'll sort of try to claw back your tokens. I thought this was hilarious. Like, how many people are you sending this Google form to that you don't have like the confidence that the people you're pre-selling to will be respectful for your token or add some value in some way? I think this is like a perfect encapsulation of like the state of our industry right now. And to our point earlier, maybe we deserve a 6-month period of BTC flat or up and everything else down. I would hate it, but you know, when you see stuff like this, how can you not think it's possible?
I don't know, Justin. Are you respectful when you sell, or are you responsible?
Of course, I'm very respectful. Especially if I'm, you know, a friend invites me into a round. I mean, you can't be the doofus that's just max dumping on day one or trying to OTC out of these things. So I've never done it, but yeah, we'll see.
Yes, yes. Well, you see this, so you get it. You do have the respect.
Yes. Yeah. So Justin would vote. Click yes.
He would, yes, of course. Yeah.
He's inviting me on the round.
It's 100%. Justin is 100% the guy who's clicking yes on that button.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Thicky, how about you?
Yeah. I have like a Telegram group, and they like, you know, a lot of creative people in that group. This is like a screenshot from last week. I had just taken on like a few positions, like, in the middle of the podcast, they just like screen capped a few of my reactions during, I think towards the end of the podcast, things started looking, and I was like, you know, a little stressed out. So they just captured these two pictures of me.
There's also a song that came out this week. Can we find that, Justin? Can you bring up the Thicky song? We did a little edit with our editor here. Thicky was right. It's called. Can we put the volume up?
Yeah, can we start from the beginning?
Yeah.
Vicky's back, he thought of life, the bunny. He knew the market was going down, cheeky off the fear when he tweeted. Vicky Bob knew that cheeky off was the fear. He showed the market before he had 100 tax long miles by the ultra liquid. Now it is network. Ultra liquid.
Is your net worth ultra liquid?
I love this because, like, if Thicky's not speaking, he's trading or eating.
And I love the Bored Ape at the end. hitting new lows. Oh no.
Just disclaimer, I did not make this, and I did not defeat GCR, but yeah.
It was a community pasta.
Vicky, you deserve a victory. You deserve a victory marathon. I mean, you were right, you know. You had this thesis, and it's been playing out now, so congratulations.
Thanks. I mean, even if I'm right, it's like my portfolio's up. Like, it's like that meme, portfolio up this much, he was right. And then the other guy was like up like 80,000%.
You're fucked when the music stops.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Another one that has been missing the 800,000% is me. Apparently, I have not been good enough friends with the dogs. I've been getting messages in my inbox. I'll read this one. This is how you become, this is after like our podcast, by the way. Someone's watching our podcast, you know, I'm talking about SHIB, shorting SHIB. And I got some very angry comments about shorting SHIB. He says, shorting SHIB is very sad. It's unclear why you would do that. Have you ever had a dog? If not, I suggest you get one and you will understand the concept of dog money. And you know, last week he signed another one just last week. He says, get a dog and you will understand. Dog money is clearly the future. Dogs 2024. So I have made some people pretty upset. And because of that, I am officially converting to dog money. And I will respect the dog money now. And just to finish off the episode, I will respectfully play a clip from the national anthem of dog money by Remy.
calling, you know that it's on. Buy dog money, don't stop till it's dawn. One more airbase, two more museums, three more walls, four more Supremes, five more stadiums. We're all out of fiat. Can you take trillions of these and go and make a Xerox? We pay our debts in our currency that might be unfurled if it's no longer the reserve currency of the world. Confidence in the dollar is permanent. Just ask any scholar. People are exchanging their dollars for dog money. Dog money?
Wait, what was this made?
It was like 2 years ago.
This was around
2 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
April 29th, 2021.
Right before the crash.
Yeah. SNL.
These top signals, in hindsight, so obvious, but...
Like, these are so funny, but it's just like, you know, it has to go to zero after like these types of people start making these types of videos.
Yeah, it makes our industry look like such a joke. I mean, I guess it is kind of a joke at this point.
It is.
But, yeah.
Don't worry. Crypto X AI will save us.
Jordy met one guy, an AI in Dubai. Now he's bulled up on crypto XAI.
He's bullish world chain.
Now he's buying world coin.
It's early.
It's early.
It's early.
No, I was gonna say, the next time we see our wonderful audience, we will be in a post-halving world, and you know what that means. Should be a good 6 months to a year. I mean, we should end on a positive, right? We're all bullish for the next year, more or less. No? Yes?
Yes.
Say it, Thicky.
Say it, Thicky.
Yeah, I no comment.
Happy Bitcoin halving. We will also have the April 20th, the 420. So we'll see. Hopefully there's a little bit of pumps in the market on that day for the coins that are aligned with 420. Otherwise, you know, it will definitely scare me that we're back into the 2021 midsummer dream where we sort of chill out before the next leg up. Cool. Well, thanks everybody for joining. It's been a while. We've done a pre-recorded one. We've been doing some live ones, but hopefully we'll get a live episode soon because those seem to be great for chatting with you guys. And we'll see you soon. Take care.